So where are we up to? Where we left off? We were in the middle of several weeks. We've been walking through Perek Hay, which is the beginning of Perek Hay, and which is the we've defined as the speech of the Yirei Elokim. Certainly one of the most important components of the Sefer. It sort of anchors the theology around which most of the debate in Kohelet revolves. Namely, the role of man versus the role of God and in the world, and the tension between them. We started with the background of the Nehenneh, or the Nehenatan, who sees God as in control of the world, and we as to just kind of going for the ride. We saw the perspective of the Amal, who believes that man is at the center of the world, and therefore we are in total control and have to make sure that we have a world that is just and fair, and if not, then it's on us. And then, but that led to a lot of complaints and a lot of concern and a lot of tension, because the world is not that way. And then we introduced the Yirei Elokim. Yirei Elokim starts with a direct critique of the Amel and all of his anger and frustration and criticism of God. And so he starts at the beginning of Perek Dalet, end of Perek Dalet, by saying to everybody, but really to the Amel, but really to everybody, that when you come into God's domain, God's house, so to speak, then you need to be quiet. You need to listen. You need to obey. You need to have a sense of reverence. The offerings here, and the reference to the fool, certainly referring to the Amal and the Nehenneh, but the offerings here we'll see in a second, much related to words, related to speech, related to critique, related to the complaints of the Amal, the complaints of the Nehenatan, and their words of criticism of God, certainly the Amal. And so says the Yirei Elokim, when you come into God's domain, your job is to listen and obey and to have reverence for God's presence, not to offer criticism that I can do better. He says it explicitly, Al tevehel al picha, don't let your mouth be rash, don't let your heart be hasty, v'libcha yemher lotzid davar lifnei Elokim, to speak words against God. God is in the heavens, you are on the earth, let your words be few. That's a direct reference to the Amal, who critiqued God for his inability to solve the what we refer to as the Dim'ata Ashukim, the tear of the oppressed, which is how his speech began. And he talks about the multitude of words that the Amal speaks that are leading to a direct complaint against God. The neder, the oath, kasher tidor, when you take an oath to God, make sure you pay it. Meaning, if you don't, if you think that God is not doing a sufficient job in this domain of running the world and protecting against injustice, then you believe that you can do better. And that's where the transition between the concept of a neder, the concept of an oath, and the concept of a complaint, of the critique of God comes from. That the critique leads one to make the assumption that they can do better, sort of almost like a kind of a platform for an election, right? You complain about what exists, and then you promise that you can do better. Okay? Do you think? And that brought us to the world of Iyov, in the world of Sefer Iyov, where really there was that sense with Iyov after 30 chapters that he was, or 40 chapters that he was complaining to God, and God finally comes to him and he says, "Okay, here are the parameters of the world I created. Man has free will. It's a natural world. Can you complain, complain, and complain? Do you think you can do any better?" So that was sort of where we left off. Tova shelotidom ishtidom. You know, the very act of the hubris involved in the very act of making that oath and saying, "I can do better," the hubris is what makes that a neg something to be avoided, even if you think that you can actually somehow manage to succeed. And that's where from Pasuk Dalet to Pasuk Hey, Al titen et picha lachtir psarecha, don't let your mouth lead you to sin. Again, all of these sins of the mouth, the neder, the oath, the critique of God, the devar lifnei Elokim, these are all connected. Don't let your mouth be rash and lead you to sin. Al tamar lifnei amalach kishgagahi, don't have to therefore apologize and say it was a mistake. Why should God be angry? And that was where we left off. rather in the temple, in the Mikdash itself, when you're in God's presence, or by extension in God's world, there's essentially two options. You have option number one, Ki berov chalamot v'avalim v'tvayim harbei, option number one, to speak a lot, to promise a lot, to think you are in control and you can change the world. But, or option number two, Ki etzel elokim yirah, fear God. Those are your two options. And therefore, he comes to his conclusion, and we actually started with this conclusion when we first started to go down the road of the Yirei Elokim, and that is, Im oshek rash v'gezel mishpat v'tzedek tireh b'amdina al titma l'chefetz. If you see oppression, which is where the Amal started from, that dimat ha'shukim, the tear of the oppressed, where the Nehenes said, it doesn't matter because we're not in control. God will deal with it. And if there's evil in the world, then God will judge it in some other. Some other world. The Amal who said, no, it's on my shoulders. It's on us. Right? If the Dimata Ashukim, if there's a tear of the oppressed and there's nobody to comfort that tear, then that's a world I'd rather not live in. And therefore, the responsibility for that justice is on my shoulders. Comes along the Yirei Elokim and says, put aside the hubris of the notion that you are in control of this world, because you're not. And let us set aside the arrogance, or the apathy, I should say, of one saying, I don't care about this world. It's all God's world, right? If you see such a problem in existence, don't be dismayed. Because the true answer lies not in the world of the Sham, the there, and not in the world of the Tachat HaShemayim, the beneath the heavens here. The answer lies in this unique partnership between God and man, this sense of a hierarchy, Gavoa me'al Gavoa, that the partnership between the one who was on high, the Melech, and the one who is higher than high, meaning the Melech Malchei Melechim, that partnership ultimately is the key to understanding how to navigate this world. And that's more or less where we left off. It's a lot of discussion in this passage about the neder, the role of the oath, which we understood to mean the person who says, I can do better. That's the amal. The role of the korban, which is the hubris of saying, I'm in control. And we led that led us to our study of Sefer Iyov. And ultimately, his message is that there's a place for all of that. There's a place for Korbanot. There's a place for, right, for man in this world. But there's also a recognition that we are not in control, that God is in control, and Gavoa me'al Gavoa, Shomer, ultimately, that hierarchy, that partnership, is what guides the world. That's more or less where we left off, I believe. Correct me if I'm wrong. Yes, that's where we sort of left off. Okay. That leads us to the next three verses, four verses. And the next four verses are complicated because he's going to jump right back into themes that we have already seen. Kesef, money, wealth, work, avodah, toil, sova, satisfying. And he's going to lead right back into frames and terms that we are familiar with. And so there is a tendency to suggest that these psukim now are back to one of the other voices which we shall encounter. And certainly from Pasuk Yudbet, I think that's true. Yesh ra'ah chola, the notion of an evil grievance in this world. That is certainly not the language of the Yirei Elokim. On the other hand, I would venture to say, and I think the correct interpretation would lead these four verses to be part of the speech of the Yirei Elokim. We're still in that domain. And as we go through it, you'll see why I say that. V'yitron eretz bakolhu, the advantage in the land for all is Melech l'sadeh neva. This translation bothers me a little bit, so I'm ignoring it for now. Melech l'sadeh ne'evad, a king who works in the field, or who makes himself a worker in the field. Specifically translated ne'evad in the context not of a servant, but of a worker, you'll see why in a moment. Ohev kesef lo yizba kesef. One who loves silver will never be satisfied with silver. Umi ohev behamon, one who loves abundance, wealth, riches, lo tvua, will never, some issue, whether this is lo with an aleph or lo with an I, with the vav, lo tvua, will never have that kind of produce. Gam zahav. In other words, the more you want, the more you need, the more you think you need, the more you want, the more you desire, the more elusive that goal becomes. If your effort, if your work is designed to achieve a certain financial benefit, if that's your goal, ohev kesef, ohev behamon, then lo yisba kesef and lo yisba tvua. He will never be satisfied, never be satiated with whatever he gains. The more you have, the more you want. And sort of this endless cycle. Furthermore, b'rivota tova, in that context, the more you have, rabu achla, the more you others come and eat of it. What advantage is there to the owner? In other words, if your goal is a certain accomplishment and achievement, then you know, if you don't share it with others, then what your accomplishment, your achievement kind of diminishes. What benefit is there to the person who wants that achievement, except that he feast on it with their eyes? That's a classic perspective which we've seen in the earlier parts of Sefer Kohelet, namely that the endless cycle of the river that never is satiated, that never fills. The more you feed the soul, the more you feed the desire, the more it wants. Mituka, on the other hand, Mituka shnat ha'oved, the sleep of the working man, and here I'm avoiding this translation intentionally, but the sleep of the man who works, Mituka, is sweet. Imaat v'imarbe, whether a little, whether a lot, v'asoba le'ashir enenu maniach lo'lishon. But wealth, abundance for the rich, does not allow him to sleep. I want to stop there, for certainly from Pasuk Bet already, we're into a whole different arena, Yeshua Achola. Again, these psukim are difficult to pinpoint exactly who is it referring to, but I think there's a very important key to unlocking the mystery of these four psukim. And the key is that word that I kept coming back to and saying, I'm concerned about the translation. Twice he says it here, where he describes the melech as melech l'sadeh ne'evad, the king who works in the field. And again, he says it in Pasuk Aleph, mituka shnat ha'oved, sweet is the sleep of the, or the slumber of the man who is oved. Now, we've had the idea of working and of toiling and of effort before. But in all of the rest of Sefer Kohelet, the word that the text uses for work, toil, labor, effort, all of those synonyms, is not the word oved. It's the other word, namely, amal.
Amal.
Amal, correct. This is the only place in the entire text of Kohelet where Kohelet uses the word oved. Not in the context of an eved, a slave or a servant. That he uses often. But the notion of avodah, Mitukashnata oved, the man, the one who works, the one who does et avodah, appears in this passage twice. And in contrast to Tet and Yud, in Pasuk Chet and Yud Aleph, where he talks about the avodah of the melech, or of the avodah of the man who's working in the field and who sleeps at night, is in contrast to the one who is laboring for the purpose of achieving the goal of amassing gold, amassing silver, amassing produce, and who is never satiated, who is never able to sleep well at night. Right? Hasova le'ashir, einenu maniach lishon, the rich, the one who wants to achieve abundance, he never has a good night's sleep because he's always laboring to achieve more, and so he can't sleep at night. Whereas mitukashnata oved, the one who is oved, is sleeps well. Question is, of course, what is the difference between amal and oved? What is the difference between the use of these terms, and why does it make such a dramatic difference here in the words of the Yirei Elokim? So that's what I really wanted to focus on today. It's a bit of a nuance, but I think it's a very important nuance because it masks for us one of the key elements, both in the Yirei Elokim and in Kohelet as a whole. If I go back to all of the references we have seen in the notion of amelut that we have encountered, and there are something like 30 or 40 different references to the word amelut, amal, toil, labor, in the book of Kohelet. Actually, I prepared a source page. Let me put the source for it in the chat. That's the source page if you want to pull it up yourself. I just pulled out a couple of examples where the word amel appears in just the chapters we've encountered. I haven't gone beyond what we've already studied. So within the first four chapters, just a quick glance, you'll see a theme that emerges from all of them. Saneti ani et kol amali, sheni amel tachat hashamash. I despised all of my labor, which I labored under the sun. Sheni chenu l'adam shi'acharai is the end of that pasuk, that I should have to leave it to the one who comes after me. Or Perek Bet, ki me'o ve'la adam b'chol amalo v'rayon libo, shu amel tachat hashamash. What does a man have for all of his labor and all the striving of his heart, which he labors under the sun? What does he accomplish by it? What does he achieve by it? What profit does one have if he works in that which he labors? Right? What is the benefit of all of that amelut? Or in Perek Dalet, v'itani et kol amal v'et kol kishrona ma'aseh ki kinat ish min he'eyu. All the work, all the labor that I see in this world is all driven by the envy of one man for his neighbor. That too is hevel v'rayon ruach. Ulami ani amel u'mechaser et nafshi mitovah gam ze hevel v'inyan ro'u. For whom do I labor and deprive my soul of enjoyment? That's why we labeled this personality, this speaker, as the amel, or the amal, meaning the person who toils, and not the oved. His use of the term is very specific. The question is, what is the difference between amal and avodah? Between toil, what I would call toil and work. And in Kohelet, it's very specific. There's only one place in the whole book where he uses the word oved, and is a direct contrast to this sense of the one who wants to work for the sake of amassing a fortune, amassing kesef, amassing produce, right? That's the amal. Whereas my perspective is mitukashnata oved. What's the difference between them? Now, it's interesting. If I go beyond the work of Kohelet, if I look at the rest of Tanakh, the word amal has a whole different connotation. In Kohelet, it's specifically a reference to work, toil, labor. Okay, so it's synonymous with the word avodah, but with a very negative connotation. Where does the negative connotation come from? It comes from the fact that outside of the world of Kohelet, the word amal is almost synonymous with evil and mischief. So here's, for example, a handful of quotations from some from Eov, some from Habakkuk, versus some of which we've seen, some of which are new for us, in which the word amal is used specifically in the context of a parallel to iniquity, mischief, trouble, evil, very negative connotations. In Eov, chapter 15, it says, Haro amal vialod aven. They conceive in mischief. They bring forth iniquity. Ubitnam tachin mirma. And their belly prepares deceit. That should be also in bold, mirma. You have three words that are synonymous with each other. Deceit, mirma, iniquity, aven, and amal. Which in Kohelet is translated as toil, but in this context in Eov is translated and should be translated as some kind of equivalent to iniquity and deceit, aven and mirma. Or the term, or Eov chapter 5. Ki lo yetse me'afar aven, u'me'adama lo yitzmach amal, ki adam la'amal yulad, u'bnei reshef yagbihu of, or uf. It's a very powerful verse. We need to kind of decipher its code. He says, affliction, aven, does not stem from the dust, doesn't come from the ground. Lo yitze mi'afar. Adama, and from the ground, from the adama, lo yitzmach amal. Trouble, amal, does not spring forth. Again, synonymous, amal and aven. Ki adam l'amal yulad, man is born to trouble. As the sparks fly upwards, v'nei reshef yagbiu uf. What does that mean? So it's often mistranslated. It's often misquoted in the context of that man is born to work, right? Ki adam l'amal yulad. But here what it really means is that when it comes to the presence of amal, aven, affliction, trouble, evil in this world, evil in this world, says Eov, doesn't stem from the ground. It doesn't stem from the dust. It doesn't come from nature. Evil in this world is the creation of the human being. Ki adam la'amal yulad. Which is a similar reference to the Rambam makes reference to a similar idea in the Mor Nebuchim, where he talks about the fact that in the global scheme of it, the majority of evil in this world is created by man, not created by nature. And we see that in the world, right? The injustice of the world is injustice created by man. And that's what he's saying. He's talking about Amal in the context of Aven, in the context of affliction. Somebody had a question. Somebody has a question? There was a hand raised.
I do.
Yes.
And what does it say in Bereshit about the Adam?
If you're referring to the reference of the verse in the context of the flood, where it says, Ki yetzer lev ha'adam ra min urav, is that the verse you're referring to, that the nature of man is evil? Is that the verse you're referring to?
There must be something there when Adam and Chava are kicked out of the Eden. There must be something there about that Adam is still going and take his bread out of earth. There's something there using Amal.
Yeah, not about part of the punishment to man is that he will have to work the field. It will take effort and pain to work the field to produce produce, right? But that's not what he's talking about here. He's not talking about whether you produce, the notion that you will have to toil the field, that the trees won't provide you your fruit and your sustenance. You'll have to work the ground. And that's something else. Maybe that's the Yirei Elokim could say that, because he's talking about avodah. We're not talking about that. We're talking here in Eov. He's talking about evil. That's the point. He's talking about iniquity. He's talking about affliction. He's talking about l'adam amal yulad, that evil in this world is brought about by man. In other words, my point is that the word amal in all of Tanakh takes on, it's a very nuanced because I'm playing with words, but the word amal in all of Tanakh has a very specific negative connotations, almost parallel to evil and iniquity and mischief. Or, for example, in Habakkuk, you see it even more so. You have pure eyes than to look at evil and to watch evil sprout. You cannot just look on mischief and let it happen. Why do you tolerate those who deal treacherously? Why are you silent, Tacharish, when the evil one swallows up the wicked? And when the wicked one swallows up the righteous. We talked about these psukim last week in the context of Eov, right? There's this notion, the opening passage of Habakkuk, where he turns to God and he says, there's so much evil in this world, but the evil is created by man. Right? Mir'ut, ra, amal, boged, and rasha are all synonymous. Evil, iniquity, rebelliousness, treachery, rasha.
I'd like to question that. In the natural world, there's a lot of predatory behavior. There's a lot of natural disaster from.
So that's what Eov's comment was, in a sense, or the response to Eov was when he compared that evil to the behemoth and to the leviathan, kind of swallow up in the world of nature. But that's the argument, right? What's the bigger evil in this world? The evil that man brings upon man, or the calamities of nature? In the scope of the world, yes, there are challenges, and yes, there are accidents, and yes, there are, let's say, we'll call them natural disasters. But in the broad scope of the world, that's the Rambam's argument, the much bigger source of evil in this world is the evil brought about by man. If you count up all of the calamities of natural disasters and you compare them to the calamities of all the world wars that were fought in the 20th century and the wars fought in the 21st century, the evil that man brings upon the world is far greater and far more devastating, far more dangerous than whatever natural challenges there are in the world. And I think that it's a delicate balance, but I think it's true. It's tangential to our subject today, because it's really the subject of Habakkuk. What I wanted to get to is the word amal and what it means, because we're going to see this in a second. One more quote just from Eov. Lama yitin amal or v'chaim l'mari nafesh. Why is light given to those that are in misery, he translates it here, or to the bitter in soul. Again, all of these terms place the word amal in a very negative connotation, as if to say the amal represents a kind of evil toil in the world, not just toil, not just work in the field, but almost an evil in this world. And
can I just say that I don't know about American. In English, we have the phrase to work mischief. To work, it means to do something bad. To work, it starts in Shakespeare, and mischief comes from the French, things that end up badly. So I think you're absolutely right. That's what amal is.
Interesting. Okay. So it's kind of crept into various dialects or various aspects of other languages too. Now, I don't think that in Kohelet, he's referring to amal in that sense. I think Kohelet refers to amal in the work, the toil, the labor, the achievement, the accomplishment sense of the term consistently. But you can't escape the negativity around which he puts, the negativity he puts around that phrase. So even if he's referring to amal in the sense of labor, working, doing, accomplishing, etc., but in the negativity around it, it makes it so that when he says, "Ulami ani amel umechaseret nafshi," for whom am I laboring and toiling and doing all this? Okay, so if it's for naught, then that's very negative. Comes along. There was a question.
May I suggest an approach? Amal is perhaps inner focused, narcissistic. only having to do with the person who is carrying out the task, whereas obeyed, evid, servant, is outward focused. It's focused on some sharing somebody else, doing things together. In other words, it's hard to, there's no word, there's no way to translate it, but I think that maybe that would be a productive approach.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, I mean, that would work too. That would work too. I'm gonna take it in a similar but slightly different direction. The basic message here, and this is what I wanted to get to in these verses in Kohelet, is that whereas the Amal, the effort of the Amal, both in terms of his personality, I'm in charge of the world, I'm going to do something with this world, everything is related to that effort and responsibility and toil and accomplishment, but it's all on him. And if he accomplishes it, great, and if he doesn't, he fails. It's all on him. And that's the danger in the Amal, because you can never accomplish it. That's what he says here. There's always more to accomplish. You can never reach the end goal. And if you are singularly focused on that this Amal has to reach its end goal, and you can't reach it, it's elusive, l'mi ani amal mechaseret nafshi, then you're always frustrated. You're always frustrated. Comes along the Arei Elokim, and he introduces a whole new concept. And the concept here is avodah, not because it needs to accomplish a task in the end, but because it has value in the effort itself. Let me repeat that sentence. We talk about avodah, the word avodah, which is synonymous in this translation here as labor, as work, effort, right? Synonymous with the word amal, but we borrow that term for all kinds of religious experiences. We talk about avodat Hashem, Torah talks about to avod, to serve God, avodat korbanot, we talk about tefillas, avodah shebalev, the service of the heart. We talk about avodah in a very spiritual sense. He's talking here about avodah in the context of working the field. But the difference being that if your work is singularly focused, if the only value to it is what you accomplish, then pasuk tet and pasuk yud, ohev kesef, lo yisba kesef. If your only value is the accomplishment at the end of the day, you're going to be constantly frustrated because you're never going to reach your end goal. Your end goals keep simply moving away, further away from you.
Rabbi.
Whereas, one second, let me finish the sentence. Whereas, if the goal is not the accomplishment at the end, but the journey itself, if the goal is the journey itself, mitukashna ta'oved, then you understand that there's a sense of humility that accompanies that avodah. You do what you can. You do the avodah for the sake of the avodah, for the sake of just the work itself. And if you accomplish the end goal, great. And if you don't, somebody else will continue that journey, will continue that work. In other words, the difference between avodah and amal in the context of Kohelet is that amal is singularly focused on a result. And that result is elusive. Whereas avodah is a process. And it's a process that partners the worker, the individual, with a bigger, broader canvas of, in this case, God, Gavah Me'al Gavah. As we'll see, that's that sense of partnership. And I think you see it here in Pasuk Yud Aleph, where he talks about sleep. Mitukashna ta'oved, the person who is an oved, whether he's oved adama, whether he's working the field, or avodah in any other sense of accomplishment in life, but if he understands that his goal is, his work is not judged by the total accomplishment end goal, but rather by the process and the effort and the amount of sort of gives it all. It doesn't have to accomplish the end goal. Im'at im'harbeh, whether little or much, right? Whether he eats a little or eats a lot, that doesn't matter. But he's put in that work. Then he sleeps well at night. Whereas if his goal is sova, if his goal is, say, if his goal is the amal, which is to accomplish the end goal of the amal, v'asova, l'ashir, and then a maniach lo lishon, he can't sleep at night.
Rabbi, this is, can I interject for a moment? I think it's basically what is says in the...
We're going to come to Pirkei Avot in a second. I'm intentionally avoiding rabbinic literature right now. We'll come to Pirkei Avot. We'll come to Lo Alechem Lecha Ligmor. We'll come to all of those rabbinic statements. They all emerge from the vantage point or from the perspective of the Eralekim. 100% correct. I'm trying to do is navigate the words, the language within the context of the text itself, so we see where Chazal pulled these ideas from. You're 100% correct.
Would be the word Oved is active. It's nothing else than an active person. That, because you are right, the other one, the Amel, is not all the time positive. It has a lot of negative.
It's only negative.
You work and you don't get there.
Right. It's only negative. There's no positive reference to the word Amal in all of Kohelet and in all of Tanakh. Just to put it in perspective.
Thank you.
Okay. It's only negative. And that's exactly the point, is that it's singularly focused on the criteria. It's on my shoulders to save the problems of the world. Well, that's called Amal. That's not going to do it. It's not going to work. Whereas if the process is you are partnered with God in the effort to create a better world, then, which is where the Yerelekim starts from, right? These Pesukim, Pasuk Chet V'Yud comes on the heels of Pasuk Zayin. Pasuk Zayin is Ki Gavoh Me'al Gavoh Shomer. That's exactly the point. It's a partnership. You do your, you're not exempt from it. You're not absolved from it like the Ne'eneh says, but it's not all on your shoulders with the hubris of and the arrogance of the Amal. It's a partnership. Well, then, therefore, all of that Amal becomes suddenly Avodah. It's a whole different term. It becomes part of a religious frame of reference. It becomes a sense that I am doing this for a spiritual accomplishment in the world to the extent that I can make a difference, and with the trust and the belief and the faith that ultimately there's a partnership with God. The Melech, the king, is a partner with God. Melech l'sadeh ne'evad. That's exactly the message. And just to compare for a moment, Pasuk Yud Aleph, I'll show you an interesting parallel. When he talks about sleep, the Amal himself in Perek Bet made the reference, Ki kol yamav machovim bekas inyano gam balaylo lo shechav libo. All his days of sorrow, travail is grief. Even at night, he cannot rest. Right? That's the world of the Amal. Perek Bet. Whereas the Yerelekim makes the argument, Metukash nata oved. A worker's sleep is sweet. Why? Because whether he's accomplished a lot or accomplished a little, it doesn't matter. He's done what he can, and the rest is up to others, and ultimately, God. And that's the difference between the Eralekim and the Amal. And the summary of it, I think you correctly pointed out, the easiest... Hang on one second, let me just finish the sentence. The simplest or most direct reference to this in the language of Chazal, which I think comes right out of this perspective... is the Mishnah in Pirkei Avot, where Rabbi Tarfon says, "Lo alecha hamlacha ligmor, v'lo ata ben chorin li batal mimena." Your job is not to finish the melacha. Melacha, avodah, these are all terms that are synonymous with each other in the language of the Torah. The Torah terms, "Sheshit yamim ta'avod v'yasita kol melachtecha." 6 days you shall work and do all your melacha. Right? The Torah doesn't talk about amal. The Torah talks about avodah, and the Torah talks about melacha. Mishnah in Pirkei Avot talks about ehovet ha-melacha, love melacha, embrace it. It's part of life. It's part of an accomplishment. You do what you can in this world for 6 days. But on the seventh day, you recognize that the world isn't yours. The hubris of accomplishment is not yours to accomplish. It's ultimately a partnership with God. That's what Shabbos is about. And so all of these terms come together. 6 days, sheshit yamim ta'avod, 6 days you will work. And do all of your melacha. Lo alecha melacha likmo, but you don't have to accomplish all of the, everything that has to be done. If you did, it would be called amal. But on the other hand, lo ata ben chorin li batel mimena, but you can't throw it up to God and say, okay, it's all on your shoulders, not on mine. This Mishnah Pirkei Avot reflects exactly the tension between the amal and the ne'enatan. The ne'enatan said, it's all on God's shoulders. I'm absolved. Right, that was the first perspective that we saw. God created the world. God masters the world. God controls the world. Made a beautiful world. Injustice, evil in the world, God's department. There is an accomplishment. There is an accountability, says the Ne'enatan, there in that world. The Amal responded to that interjection, to that statement, the Amal back in Perek Dalet, responded to the Ne'enatan and said, wait a second, but this man, oppressing man, Dimata Ashikim, you want to throw that back into the shoulders of God? I'm out. I don't want any part of it. We are responsible for this world. It's all in our shoulders. Comes along the Ereel Akim and says, neither of you are right. This is about partnership. This is about Avodah, not Amelut. This is about Shomer Gavor Me'al Gavor Shomer. This is about the role of the Melech and the role of the Mikdash, and they both have a place. And we have to recognize that balance between them. That's the perspective. Kohelet has presented three views to this point. The extremes on either side, the Ne'enatan and the Amal, and ultimately the Ereel Akim, who walks down that middle path and says there's an element of truth in both of them, but we need to partner it together. We need to recognize God's role in the world, and we need to recognize our role in the world. I'm going to stop here and take a question, and then we'll do a summary. Yeah. Somebody had a question before.
Hi. So all of this really reminds me of communist propaganda. You do what... And...
I'm having a very hard time hearing...
In this case.
I'm having a very hard time... Sorry for interrupting, but I'm a very hard time hearing you. There's something wrong with your mic, and for some reason, I'm not hearing you clearly. Can you put your question into the chat?
Yep.
But your reference to Lo Alecha Melacha Ligmor, that's exactly the verse that I just quoted. It's on the source page before that, that I think sums up exactly where this tension is referring to.
The only other thing...
I'll tell you something. That's an interesting perspective. And I'll tell you the notion that it reminds you of a communist perspective. There's a certain element of this that is reminiscent of a philosophy articulated by an early Zionist, labor Zionist philosopher by the name of A.D. Gordon. Familiar with his work? There's a Wikipedia page about him. You can take a look at it. A.D. Gordon was one of the founders of one of the early Zionist thinkers and end of the 19th, early 20th century. He's part of the Second Aliyah movement. And he, in many ways, he kind of, that early Zionist effort to work the field, the Jewish people cut off from nature and they don't have a national identity. And therefore, in order to solve that, we need to accomplish a new path, which is to work the land, to see the work of the field as a kind of a spiritual existence, a spiritual entity. He's developed this idea very powerfully. And there's an element of that here, no question. There's an element of that here, that there's a value to the work, the labor itself. The work itself. However, the difference is that what Kohelet is articulating is he's using the word avodah in response to the amal. In other words, these four psukim, I believe, are really a direct response to the amal. The amal wanted to talk about the effort of everything in this world is on man's shoulders, and therefore he talked about amal. So the Yahweh Elohim turns around and he says, after his whole expression, a description of the world of the Mikdash and the world of service of God and the partnership with God, etc., which is foundational theology, he comes along and says, you want to talk about work in the world? That's fine. I agree. But not because the world's responsibility rests on you. There's a partnership with God. And so he changes the word amal to the word avodah. So if all I had were these four verses, I could see where one could read into that a little bit more of a kind of a, secular labor Zionist kind of philosophy of it's all about work the field and everything will be great. But I think in the context of what this passage represents is that it's describing this as a symbol of the broader philosophical canvas. The broader philosophical canvas is nothing in this world is only on man or only on God. And that everything in this world is about the partnership. We partner with God. That's how the Torah begins. The Torah begins with the notion God created the world and he gave it to man. And he said, L'ovda, what's the two words? Where God put man into the Garden of Eden for the purpose of L'ovda u'lishomra. Right? To guard it, to protect it, and to work it, to do something with it. Le'ovda. It's God's world, but it's also man's world. There's a partnership, right? But the word there, avodah, is not an accident. Okay, one more question, and then we'll summarize.
The only time I see a melon is like an idiom when they say, hey, my melon, tema melon. You know?
Okay, so one thing I will caution us to be careful with is the use of language. If we're playing with the nuance of language, one has to distinguish between the language in Tanakh and the language of rabbinic literature.
Okay.
Because they're 1,000 years apart. And words change. So for example, we've talked about this in various contexts. For example, the word olam, which in Tanakh means eternity and in rabbinic language means world, this world, next world, olam hazeh, olam. They're very different. Chazal say this themselves. Lashon the mikra l'chud, lashon chachamim l'chud. The language of Tanakh is separate from the language of the rabbis. Language transitions, languages change, and words change in their meaning. We have it in English, right? We all know words that today means something completely different than they meant 30 years ago, let alone 1,000 years ago. So in Tanakh, the word amal is only ever used in a negative context, whether it's referring to labor, work, or toil, or whether it's referring to evil. And that's why Eov can refer to evil as amal, because it has that negative context. And avodah can be both. You can have avodat parech, slavery, that we had in Egypt, and you can have avodat Hashem. At Hashem alakecha tirao, tavdu et elokim al har hazeh. You will serve God on this mountain. So there are certain terms that in the world of Tanakh mean one thing. 1,000 years later, in the language of Chazal, the rabbinic language, they've taken on completely different meanings and context. So yes, Chazal can refer to amelus batorah, the toil in Torah, as a value, but you'll never find that kind of language in Tanakh. Does that sort that out?
Yeah, thank you.
No problem. Okay, so more or less that brings us to the end of our study of the Yirei Elokim. To just summarize the perspective of the Yirei Elokim, he uses the contrast between avodah and amelut as a kind of a symbol of his whole perspective, which is summarized in this key phrase, gavoh mi'al gavoh, that sense of partnership between man and God. So what I've prepared for us at this point is a kind of a break between where we're up to at this point in the book and what comes next is a sort of a brief summary of the major themes we've encountered so far and who says what. Remember, we've only encountered three of our four key personalities, but at this point we have enough information to be able to break down the themes of the book by responses of each of them. And so what I've prepared on the source page is a little chart. I hope you can see. And what I've done is I've pulled in the text itself, and I'm just going to do a quick review of where we're at in the book of Qohelet, basic themes that have become our subjects around which the book has so far evolved. The first, of course, is the sense of righteousness and justice in the world and responsibility for justice. Who is responsible for justice in this world? Another subject that we've encountered is the role of society, the role of the king, the role of leadership. Another has been this context of this notion of critique of God, of right? If existence, if there's evil in the world, can we critique God in this world? And related to those two is the element of human effort. How much human effort, how much ishtadlus, how much work and toil is on our shoulders to make a difference in this world? And so those are not necessarily the biggest themes of the book, but they're certainly the four major subjects around which the debate of each of these personalities has revolved. And if we go through them one by one, you'll see the Nanatan we met first in chapter 3. I meant to write the chapters down. This was chapter 3, this is chapter 4, and this is chapter 5. More or less, you could, with certain bridges, that's chapter 3, 4, and 5. So the Nanatan was our first encounter, and he was the one who said, beautiful world, God created the world, we are guests in God's world, we started with the philosophy of Yitzchak, we are literally receiving the beautiful world that God has created, God created this world perfect, and therefore man is not to engage in changing it. What do we accomplish? On the contrary, leave the world as God created it. As to the question of what happens when there's injustice in this world, the Netatan's answer was simple. God will judge the righteous. God will judge the wicked. There, sham. I left out that word, right? Sham, in that world. In some other, the shamayim v'ta'aretz, if you remember, we talked about shamayim v'aretz, the sham, the shamayim, the world of heavens, the world outside of our domain, that's God's domain. God will take care of it. Our job here is to just be and enjoy the presence of God. And that was exactly what triggered the Amal's response, who said that in such a world of the tear of the oppressed going unanswered and unaddressed, that's not a world I can live in. And so he flips that around. As to the role of society and the role of the king in the mindset of the Nanatan, what role is there for a king? Or for a society, or for a kingdom, or for a structure to society? None. Because your job is to receive God's world. You're like Adam and Eve in Gan Eden. As for criticizing God, that doesn't even enter into the conversation, because everything is God-centered and God-focused, and therefore man's effort is irrelevant. Hakol asay yafe b'ito, God does everything in its proper time. What benefit does man have in his toil? There's that word again. Right? Man, God is totally in control. That was the mindset of the Nanatan. The Amal, the toiler, the builder, the one who said no, on the contrary, we can't live in such a world where God is the sole address to the tear of the oppressed. That is man's responsibility, and responsibility for justice ultimately is on our shoulders. As to the role of society, that led the Amal to a problem, is that man is driven by jealousy and by negative motivation in his work, in his accomplishment. If he wants to build, he wants to talk about it, then he's jealous of somebody else building more than he, so he tries to do more. So there's that sense of competition that is destructive. So therefore, the solution is to take these individuals and bring them together and let them work together and let them partner with each other. If you have two, if two are better than one, then three is better than two. And as you continue to build, you ultimately build an entire society that works together for a common cause and a common good. And that led him to his conclusion about the melech, and that ultimately the responsibility for the world is on the shoulders of the king, as a symbol of society as a whole. In to the question of critique of God, the Amal spent a lot of time critiquing God, right? That was his whole point at the beginning of his description of the presence of injustice in this world. And if man is totally in control, then God has very little role to play in that perspective. And it's all human effort. It's all on our shoulders. It's all to accomplish whatever we can accomplish. And if we can't accomplish it, then we have failed, which is why the Amal fails. In the end of chapter 4, where he talks about Tovim Hashnayim Min Ha'Echad, two are better than one, and ultimately the Echut HaMishilash LaBemirayim Yatek, the three-pronged cord, right, that ultimately it's about society. Okay, so judge the king. Does he accomplish his task or doesn't he accomplish his task? Well, Shlomo HaMelech had a particularly personal connection to that failure. And he talks about Melech Zaken V'Ksil, the old foolish king who can't succeed. And we talked about the practical element of his world that collapsed in the aftermath of his failure. So ultimately, that's the problem with the Amal, is that if you don't accomplish it, then it's all for naught. And that led us to the Yirei Elokim. The Yirei Elokim, the foundation of the Yirei Elokim, is to combine the Ne'netan and the Amal into one, to take the faith in God and the faith in man, combine them together, and you get that partnership, Gavoh Me'al Gavoh. And the role of the king, meaning man, human king, and king of kings, Kadosh Baruch Hu, that's the palace, the two palaces of the Mikdash and the palace of the king, in partner, Gavoh Me'al Gavoh. Right? And therefore, we have to have a sense of humility. Critique of God is hubris. Our job is not to promise that we can do a better job. Our job is to do whatever is upon us to able to do great. And the rest is to obey, is to recognize that God has a role to play. And we partner with God in faith and hope in the sense of the future. And that's where, right, we are not absolved of our responsibility. That sentiment of we are not absolved from doing our effort, but nor do we have to complete the task, that is exactly the combination of these last two boxes. And therefore, he talks about avodah and not amelut. He talks about partnership with God in that process. So more or less, that summarizes the first four chapters of Kohelet, the first three personalities that we have encountered. And our next piece will be chapter 6, which is a kind of or the end of chapter 5, I should say, which is a kind of a response to the Yirei Elokim. We'll, Bezrat Hashem, look at that in our next class. But I will stop here and take questions.
I have a question.
Yes.
George Clooney has a wife whose name is Amal Clooney. She's and from her name, I learned that that there is an Arabic meaning of the word Amal, which is hope. I'm wondering whether hope it should be is a better translation, is the best translation for Amal in Kohelet.
Hope. In hope, did you say?
Hope, H-O-P-E.
Not in Kohelet. Not in the way I understand Kohelet. The way I understand Kohelet is that each of these personalities represents a different aspect of the world. And the Amal is not a hopeful person. There's no element of hope in any aspect of his description. It's a bitter perspective from start to finish. He'll write himself out of the book in another chapter. He'll be so frustrated that he will literally write himself out of the script. So I would be hard-pressed to put that into a positive spin. Avodah, yes. Yirei Elokim, yes. Ultimately, we'll see. We'll find the Chacham in a... I'm not familiar with the Arabic, so I don't know the spelling of it. It gets into a whole different issue. So I would avoid that connection. But okay, that's just me. Yes, Mavasha, you have a question.
It's not so much a question. The same time slot on Sunday evening is occupied by Dr. Benny Gesundheit.
A very dear friend of
mine. Right. So you understand the depth of his perception.
Amazing work.
This past Sunday, he focused, it was in Hebrew, but he focused on Tehillim, Psalm 91, Yoshev Beseter Elyon. And he divided it up, of course, and he discusses it in terms of conversations, who is speaking. And I think that listening to that shiur, if you can, is very instructive in terms of our context. I think it's a very helpful guy.
For sure. For sure. I mean, listening to anything Benny says or does is amazing. But I will add to that is that we have talked about this style of literature in Kohelet as a conversation, both in Kohelet and in Job, in Iyov. But you're 100% correct. It's certainly prevalent in Tehillim as well. It's very common, and there's a theme that runs through all of those four books, with three books, it's very common in literature that is philosophical in nature. Certainly in Tanakh, we call the works of Chochmah in Tanakh, Iyov, Mishlei, Tehillim, and certainly Iyov. Kohelet falls into that category as well. So yeah. Okay. Any other questions? I think another hand up.
Yes. Rabishol, what is your
Thank
email?
You very much.
I'll put my email in the chat.
Thank you.
Do you hear me better now?
Minimally.
I wonder who was the first Haredi that said that they don't have to work. Would you happen to know, like they knew about Gordon?
No. But that is it's a much longer conversation to process out. It's certainly not a Tanakh perspective. No, I'm not sure that they do. That's a much longer conversation. I'm happy to have that conversation offline if you want to reach out to me.
Okay, thanks.
No problem. All right. Have a wonderful day, everybody. And please remember, there is no class next Tuesday. So we will be meeting again in 2 weeks' time.
What? You're not teaching on Boxing Day?
I will be in New York on Boxing Day, and I will be very busy with family. So I will not be available to teach next Tuesday. So, Mirtz Hashem, in 2 weeks' time. Have a wonderful day, everybody.
And you're